the truth. You can't handle the truth.
W-I-L-L-I-M. He's the truth, baby. So here I am. W-I-L-L-I-M. He's the truth, baby. So here I am.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and we are together, folks, live from Scottsdale, the Scottdalians, the New York boys, bringing you some sports talk radio. You want to join the show, the adventure, come ride with us, 718-664-9098, like always. We might even get to some of your emails today at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Check out the website, very interactive, rayandtaytoday.com. Twitter, Facebook, the conversation is going on. We've had some hot topics going on Twitter, so it's kind of fun. And, you know, get ready for our NBA preview show tomorrow night, I think 6 Eastern. So, Ray, let them know, man. Straightforward show.
Let's do it. So we've got baseball talk. That's the World Series. We'll give you a recap and look forward. It's almost the end of baseball season. Can you imagine? Then we'll get into college football. We had a few top 25 games that we want to go over. And then we'll dedicate the rest of the show to the NFL because we're going to give you our NBA preview tomorrow. So just hang tight for that. We're going to put all of our thoughts and efforts on the second half of the show to the NFL. So let's do it. Let's start with some quick breaking news and then jump right into our three big sports.
Well, listen, man, why don't you let them know about NASCAR? Your boy Jeff Gordon won. I think my guy Jimmy Johnson came in fourth place, Kenseth in second. So what's the standings with three races to go in the Sprint Cup chase?
Wow. So Jeff Gordon wins. Matt Kenseth comes in second. Clint Bowyer, Brad Keselowski, and Jimmy Johnson round out the top five. So with three races to go in the Cup, can you imagine? We're only down to three more races. What, baseball is ending? NASCAR is ending? So Matt Kenseth and Jimmy Johnson are tied.
Wow.
But Matt Kenseth would win the tiebreaker. So keep that in mind. So Kenseth and Jimmy Johnson are tied, and then Jeff Gordon is holding on 27 points behind. Kevin Harvick's 28 points behind, and Kyle Busch is 36 points behind. So it really looks to be a two-man race between Matt Kenseth and Jimmy Johnson.
But it's tight. Like, that's, you know, you got to get excited about that because, you know, when you have – things like championships and stuff, and, you know, especially in sports that are sort of individual, but there's so many guys coming to the end. You know, hey, we like NASCAR. We're not aficionados, but that's going to be exciting. And, you know, my money's on Jimmy Johnson.
It's hard not to, but you know what? Matt Kenseth won the first one when they went to this new format. He won the first one, and then Jimmy Johnson proceeded to win five in a row. So, it should be great. I mean, if you're a NASCAR fan, this is awesome. You couldn't. This is exactly what the Sprint Cup series is all about, where they have 10 races and it's close, and there are 3, 4, 5 drivers that are really in contention all the way down the stretch. So it looks like Jeff Gordon's got an outside chance, but it's really a two-man race. So how exciting is that between the Kenseth and the Jimmy Johnson camps? So good for them, man. We'll definitely keep our eyes on that the next few weeks.
Yeah, and, you know, before we jump right into the World Series, we got to keep our eye on some of these injuries, and the trade deadline is tomorrow, so 4 p.m. for the NFL. There's rumors of Tony Gonzalez getting traded, Josh Gordon getting traded, so, you know, we might have to update you with that tomorrow for even on our NBA preview show as we go on after the trade deadline. And Julius Thomas is banged up. He's having an MRI probably as we speak. Maybe they'll release, you know, during the show, the updates of his ankle. He went out of the Denver win. So, you know, hey, look, football, the injuries, nothing was like last Sunday. But, you know, the one thing you can count on, unfortunately, is guys getting hurt. And sometimes, you know, you almost want to say the stretch run in the NFL season is based on health, you know, which is sort of, you know, kind of ironic in that sense. And even we'll mention it tomorrow, but speaking of health, you've got Granger, who's out, who missed all the last season basically for the Pacers, and he's sort of out with, you know, right now his left calf. So to start the season about 3 weeks. So there you go with that stuff.
There you go. Well, let's make that transition. Let's talk about MLB. Let's talk about the World Series. So Ray had the Cardinals winning. Tay had the Red Sox winning. And guess what? They're tied 2-2. So it's a best-of-three series. Now, we can talk about the 2-3-2 format, but it's a best-of-three series. So this series is definitely going back to Boston. So let's talk about the game last night and then look forward to the rest of the series.
Well, the one thing that stood out to me last night that was sort of incredible, you know, we saw the end together, but I got to say, Big Papi, the way that he was sort of rallying his troops, they're comparing it to, like, you know, he basically had them like in an NFL huddle, and he got them hyped up because, you know, look, these guys have had some serious slumps, and then the hero to most, you know, he's on somebody's stamp in Boston, not Elvis Presley, but Johnny Gomes, hits the three-run homer, Red Sox win 4-2, sort of clutch. But I think the thing that stands out in this series is sort of pretty good pitching, but timely and costly errors in the field and the defense. You know, doesn't that surprise you?
It really does, because these two teams had 97 wins, and they were the most sort of solid top-to-bottom teams that you had out there. And you can't say it's nerves, because, look, the Cardinals won the World Series 2 years ago. Boston just playing in the AL East, and they won the World Series in 04 and 07. So I can't really say, oh, you know, they're nervous, it's their first time, it's a bunch of rookies. This is just, you know, unfortunate that it's bad. You know, bad baseball at times. There's some critical errors. And you know what's interesting? A different player, Singleton, said something very smart, I thought, on ESPN. He said, look, this series is tied 2-2. Somebody's going to win it, obviously, but the losing team is going to kick themselves, and the losing team is going to say, not only did we not win the World Series, but we didn't even play our best baseball. And that's the part that's going to kill the losing team, because the losing team is going to think, this was our World Series to win. So
right, the Cardinals had two errors tonight, didn't they? I mean, last night? They had two errors.
No, Boston had a couple errors, but they still won.
Oh, Boston
won.
Had the two errors. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, that's right.
Johnny Gomes bailed them out. And, you know, it's interesting to see the dynamics, right? Clay Buchholz could only go four innings, but he was gritty and grinding it out. And their new savior, the guy that only pitched, I think, a couple times in October before the World Series, Felix Dubon, goes and gives him 2 2/3, basically wonderful baseball, strikes out three. And then they had John Lackey, who hadn't pitched in relief since 2004, gives him a perfect eighth inning before they get to the
No, that was clutch.
So, I mean, that's what World Series baseball is about, right? So I give Boston credit, and look, St. Louis too, but right, we'll talk about Boston because they won this game. But that's unbelievable. So John Lackey comes in, never having, you know, having not pitched relief in 9 years. And then the other interesting thing was, like you said, David Ortiz. You know, the guy's batting 727 in the World Series, in this World Series, and he's batting 430 overall, 434, I think, in his three World Series. And he gets pulled out of the game, and instead of, you know, hanging his head, he gets pulled out for a pinch runner, and then eventually, you know, gets replaced at first base.
Yeah, Napoli came
and
in.
And Napoli comes in at first base. But, you know, instead of hanging his head, he's rallying the troops. He's getting them fired up. Because think about it. If you're batting 727 in this World Series, you can make an argument you should never leave.
Never.
And it's not like Mike Napoli's a gold glove first baseman. So you know what? But he said, you want to win this? I'm rallying my troops. I'm trying to get everybody fired up. And good for him. And I love to see that in both teams, you know, doing that as well. Alan Craig on the Cardinals, I keep re-injuring that foot. You know, on the interference play, he injured the foot. He did make an appearance as a pinch hitter. So we'll see if he can stay healthy. Obviously, it helps in the American League part to get the DH, but in the National League part, you're probably just going to see him once a game, potentially as a pinch hitter.
Right, and tonight we go back to the Game 1 starters, right?
Yeah, so tonight, here's the subplot, right? You've got the best pitcher that the Cardinals have. Well, Waka, effectively is the best pitcher, but their most high-profile pitcher is, is Adam Wainwright. And so Adam Wainwright didn't pitch well in game one. So you got the rematch, Lester and Wainwright, tonight. So I think it's critical that St. Louis wins this game if they want to win in this series. I don't know if they could go into Boston and win two. So I think they really have to get this. And then tomorrow night would be Waka and Lackey. So that looks like – sorry, Wednesday night back in Boston would be Waka
and
Lackey.
And that's what I said to you last night. I was like, really, this is the one – St. Louis has got to win this game because they're not going to go to Boston and win 6 and 7. So this is St. Louis's night tonight. Really, it is. Or else we could just wrap this up in a bow tie, and maybe not game 6, but even a game 7. Boston would probably overwhelm them, the crowd, everything. I think just the moment of it, it's all about timely hitting. And, you want to see sort of the stars like an Ortiz or, our boy Yadier Molina. You want to see these guys come through in the clutch, Carlos Beltran. I mean, we talked about this before. I mean, you even sent me a text. Beltran, 16 years, this is his first World Series. Unfortunately, he's a little banged up with the ribs, but he's been waiting for this moment all my life. the little Phil Collins, Genesis, waiting for this moment forever. And, you don't want to lose it when you're there. You really don't.
Right, and he's one of the clutchest players, in MLB history. I mean, it's Carlos Beltran. Remember in 05, that unbelievable series, that's what got him that contract with the Mets. I mean, this guy has been clutch as clutch can be. So I'm glad to see him finally getting his shot in the World Series. Wasn't happy to see him get banged up and get his ribs all, smashed up against the wall, but Carlos Beltran has been doing his thing. He's delivered so far for the Cardinals. But you know what? It's exciting. Best 2 out of 3. So one game in St. Louis, 2 in Boston. Are you still sticking with your pick?
Well, I am, and so is, young William Truth, back home at the hospital. He was hanging out with Uncle Ray last night, and, William and I both picked the Red Sox in 7, and my oldest son is like you. He's riding with the Cardinals with you, Elijah. So I got to stick with them, and you know why? I think there's something. You know how when you just feel like momentum, like that year when they beat the Yankees and then they swept the Cardinals 4-0, like you just knew no one was going to beat the Red Sox, and I sort of felt that way with the Heat, both years, even last year with the Spurs. I still had confidence that the Heat would do it. So I still think it's for some reason, I don't know why, I just think maybe it's the beards, maybe it's, Boston Strong, the tragedy that, went on in the marathon and just the way, the Bruins, held in with the Blackhawks, but they lost. I think Boston's going to get a championship, and I don't know if it's coming from the Patriots. So the sports gods or whatever, some force is going to drive them, and the Red Sox will win. I got to say.
Are you growing your beard? Are you growing your beard in unison with the Red Sox?
I can't do that. I got to keep the goatee. I'm growing my hair back, though. had to cut it off for the summer. It's so hot out here. But listen, Ray will tell you, today is like a beautiful 76 degrees. It's just like, I don't know. Hey, I don't want to rub it in on folks, but, Arizona's nice. Scottsdale's kind of nice. I will say that. But really what I want to ask you is, are you ready to talk about what happened this weekend? Because I think it might have been one of the most exciting college football and NFL in terms of just endings, like the way games were coming down to the wire. So how about this? Why don't we hit some smooth beats, and then we'll be right back with some college football talk. Ray and Tay.
We're back, and we're back to talk pigskin, that oblong object that just bounces kind of funny when it hits the turf. So let's get into it. College football. So first of all, the BCS standings came out.
Yeah.
And were there any surprises? I mean, surprise, Oregon flip-flops again with Florida State. So they're back
right.
at number two. Florida State's at number three. And aside from that, you know, anything else stand out? I mean, so Baylor's at number six. Miami's at seven.
Yeah, Miami and Baylor. I mean, not surprised, but I think it's just overall, it's sort of incredible because if you said to somebody in the beginning of the season that that was what was going to be happening, they would have looked at you like you were crazy. And so here we are, you know, going into week 10, week 9 of the NFL next week, and week 10 of college football, and, you know, November is here. We say goodbye to October, you know, Friday is November 1st. And I'm kind of surprised. Look, Ohio State, they have to sort of accept their fate that those three teams, it's almost impossible with who Ohio State plays that they could leapfrog them. But I don't know. If I'm Baylor or Miami, you're sort of just hoping to stay, you know, on the road. Miami beat Florida State. That's their dream. And then maybe they could get up there if, you know, Ohio State drops to Michigan and Oregon loses to Stanford or something. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah, you know, it's funny because we always wanted to see Alabama, Oregon all year, and it looks like that's what we're headed towards. If Oregon and Stanford, if Oregon beats Stanford, and if Alabama
oh, yeah.
takes care of their business, then it seems inevitable. Florida State still has, you know, a chance. Ohio
Famous
State
Jameis.
Has a chance. Although Ohio State would have to get through Michigan twice in back-to-back, right? They'd have to beat them for the last game of the season and beat them in the new Big Ten championship. I do like to see teams like Baylor come up out of nowhere and, you know, be a top 16, right? Why not? The team that was the surprise thus far was Missouri, and they ended up losing to South Carolina. So we'll get into that in a sec, but they're at number nine. So their dream season, look, it's still going to be a fantastic season even if they end up with one loss. But there was some, you know, chirp around there about a potential, you know, bid for the national championship. But I think ultimately we're looking at Alabama, Oregon. Unless Stanford can pull an upset, this steamroll, you know, the trains keep chugging along, and it looks like one versus two. And that would be a great national championship. So I wouldn't be at all disappointed if that's what we saw.
Right. And last week we sort of predicted that. We said that because of the schedule remaining that Oregon would, you know, leapfrog Florida State, and they did so quickly. And then if, like you said, if they hold on and beat Stanford, you know, they could leapfrog Alabama, let's be honest. I mean, you know, let's talk about that game, man, because I think, you know, look, we had George Reister on, you know, the Oregon Duck tight end, and, you know, he was live from Eugene, so go back and listen to our show on Friday, the 25th. Great show. You know, George went for the 52-burger, which, you know, you and I didn't do. We all picked Oregon. But I think what I loved about this game is one thing that we did discuss is their defense. And their defense is maybe a little underrated, and I think they made a statement. Now, UCLA played decent in the first half, you know, but they got the special teams touchdown. But in terms of, you know, going in the half tied 14-14, UCLA's offense was shut out in the second half. And that offensive line, and we talked about, and George brought up that stat, you know, and they said it again, Herb Street had said it about, you know, Hundley in the last couple of years being the most, you know, hit or sacked quarterback. And you could see Oregon's defense going after him and getting him. He was flustered, but, you know, like I said, look, I was impressed, and Marshall was doing his thing. DeAnthony Thomas didn't even do so much, but Marshall, you know, was a beast. And Mariota, man, I mean, again, this guy, him and Jameis, it's one and two. I really clearly think it's one and two for the Heisman. But the Oregon defense, you hold him to 64 yards for Hundley, that's incredible. You know what I mean? 64 yards passing, that's all the guy had. So let's stand up and salute Oregon's defense, you know. And Mariota only threw for 230, so, you know,
right.
The defense
so
stood out.
Well, that was the part the defense for sure for Oregon
and Marshall.
Keeping a potential Heisman Trophy winner, you know, potential top NFL prospect to 13 for 19 for 64 yards, that was pretty incredible. But here's the thing that also scares you if you're playing Oregon, and that's why I think that Oregon, because of their style, is one of the only teams that maybe could beat Alabama because you can't even mimic it in practice. The fact is that it was tied 14-14 at the half, and Oregon was up 21-14 after three, and then they scored 21 unanswered in the fourth. So not only was their defense good, they're so explosive. And if I told you that Oregon would score 42 points and get one touchdown and 230 yards from potentially the Heisman Trophy front runner in Marcus Mariota, and also get not much out of DeAnthony Thomas. And so they got great running from Marshall and Tyner, right?
Yeah.
200 yards, 210 from the two of them. But really,
and Marshall had three touchdowns, 133 and yeah. three touchdowns.
Yep. But here's the thing. But your other guys, so that's the thing. They're so explosive that they have multiple guys that can go beat you. So you're in a situation where death by multiple slashes, who do you let beat you? So they stop Mariota, great. They stop DeAnthony Thomas, great. They still gave up 42 points. So this team is hard to handle. This Oregon team is hard to handle. And if their D can keep you, can take a possession or two away from you, and their offense is as explosive as it is, this team is just, wow, this team is an exciting team to watch.
Now, listen, you said it. And what I think is also interesting, I mean, you know, that game in itself was just exciting for a bit, but then, you know, they squashed it out. Keeping in the Pac-12, I got to give Oregon State some credit. They fought against Stanford. Stanford wins 20-12 to make next week's game with Oregon and Stanford still, you know, mean so much. But Oregon State, they had a chance, and they were driving at the end and had a chance to potentially win this game. But Stanford's defense, and that's what I said on Friday's show, I thought Stanford's defense would flex their muscles, and I think they're getting to a point after what they did at Washington and then Oregon State. I think Stanford's defense is at a place, you know, and what they did at UCLA as well, where they are ready to have a big game against Oregon. I don't know if that's going to be the shootout or if it's going to be, you know, I just think Stanford's defense is waking up. So, you know, because Oregon State's pretty explosive, and they have 12 points, you know.
You're right. And Stanford has to be thinking the glass is half full or the glass is half empty. I mean, it depends on your personality, right? Hogan gets held to 88 yards. He goes 8 for 18 for 88 yards, and yet you still win the game on the road against the top 25 team. So the good thing is that Gaffney ran the ball really well, another three-touchdown performance. So he was 145 yards, three touchdowns. But
he's a beast.
You got rid of all the games that you needed to before your big game next Thursday against Oregon, and what a game that's going to be. So, wow, let's just you know, buckle up our helmets and let's. And it's two contrasting styles, but on both sides, it's funny because, you know, you would look at the offense first, but the thing is, both of these defenses are playing much, much better. So this game should be fantastic next Thursday.
Yeah, no, definitely. And look, let me ask you this. I mean, are you sort of disappointed that Missouri lost? Because they were the only ones to maybe shake up this whole thing as a surprise. They go from 5-9. They lose, you know, a battle in overtime, 27-24. South Carolina, you know, that's a big win. You know, you thought their season, you know, was sort of fading away. But Clowney and the guys and, you know, Shaw, you know, did what he had to do. I was kind of impressed, you know, because Shaw's been banged up. I mean, you know, we didn't know what you were going to get from him. And, you know, he pulled out, you know, 201, three touchdowns. That's pretty impressive. You know, playing hurt, Clowney and the defense stepped up, and they won it overtime. So I was sort of kind of want to see Missouri get in that mix because they were sort of the surprise of the season, them and Baylor, in terms of teams that, you know, were not projected top 10. But, you know, hey, we got to tip our hat to South Carolina and Steve Spurrier. You know, he's like the old ball coach, right? He's going to, you know, do what he's got to do and make it happen. And, look, 222 yards from Thompson, that sums it up right there, you know. I mean,
I wished that, you know, I like when the old boys network gets shaken up, right? And so to have Missouri come out of nowhere and do their thing in the SEC, I love it. Matty Moak played, as a freshman, right? He was 10 for 25. He had a touchdown. He also had an interception, so he wasn't tremendously accurate. But Missouri, they played well enough given the circumstances. The problem is that South Carolina really stepped up, and this made their season. Look, there's a big, big difference between being, they were 3-2. If they lose that game, they'd be 3-3 in the SEC, and they would have been 5-3 overall. So this one game swing makes a big difference. So South Carolina, salvage their season. They're not going to be in national championship contention, but certainly they'll be a top 15 team, they hope going forward for the rest of the season. They'll get themselves a great, a very good bowl game. So you like to see that, the banged up Shaw and Thompson combined for over 400 yards. So South Carolina is still a good team. They have some injury problems, but they're still a good team.
And so, at the end of the day, you can't expect Missouri to be, without Franklin, they can't be as good as they would have been with him. So, it just shows you how great the SEC is. I mean, it's almost like everybody else pales in comparison to the SEC, and this is just shows you the depth of that conference.
No, you're totally right, and it's sort of amazing. And I was going to say, I got to do it. Before we talk about the game that I predicted, Oklahoma winning, shout out, because there was almost not, it wasn't an upset, but for all the injuries, I tip my hat to my Terps. Homecoming, 40-27. They definitely got smacked by Florida State. They beat Virginia, lost to Wake Forest. So not a bad loss at all. Clemson beats, my Terps, yo Terps, and down in Maryland at College Park, but 40-27. So I got to give my props. But how about Oklahoma? Number 15, Charles Davis, our friends of the show, and Gus Johnson, were doing a game. Number 10, Texas Tech at number 15, Oklahoma. I said Oklahoma would win, and let me tell you, they rose to the occasion. Bell, wow, 38-30. Oklahoma pulls it out. And I got to tell you, this game, they went back and forth. I'm catching some of it, I'm sort of back and forth at home in the hospital watching the game. But I got to give credit to Oklahoma's defense when they had to slow down Texas Tech to sort of pull out the game. That's exactly what they did, I mean, look, 385 yards still from from Texas Tech?
Webb. From Webb.
Yeah, Webb. Yeah, exactly. He still did what he had to do, but give him credit, man. Oklahoma, even though they were lower ranked at home, they stepped up when they had to and won that game. So that was big for me. I was proud of them.
Go Sooners. And you know what? They're 7-1 in the Big 12. So this was a big game because Texas Tech was undefeated in the Big 12. And so now they win – they win a tiebreak, so this is a big win for Oklahoma. They were teetering on having a subpar or not a typical Oklahoma season, but I think this win really helps put the ship back on track. So they're fine. I think Oklahoma Sooners are fine. They're again a little banged up, but they're going to end up having a decent season in Norman.
Yeah, and they were able to get 277 yards on the ground. You combine that with Bell's, passing for, 249, that's a balanced attack. 277 to 249,
yeah.
I mean, it was explosive.
That's
in
500
that
yards of offense, yeah, sure.
Yeah, hey, it's good, but not as exciting as what happened yesterday in the NFL, Ray. I mean, I guess we got to start with Sunday Night Football, but honestly, the only game that I really want to talk about is those Cowboys and Lions. So, look, let's talk about Minnesota, okay? Look, Green Bay, we said they would be too much, but didn't know that Minnesota could put up 31 points. So give them credit, 44-31. Them Packers handled the Vikings, on the fantasy side, Jordy Nelson had a huge game, Aaron Rodgers, of course, does his thing. This year he's not dominant. Two TDs, 285 yards. But I think the young kid, Eddie Lacy, I told you, he, to me, that he sort of is now the the horse. He's the cowbell. When you get 29 carries, 94 yards, a touchdown, and you know had some receiving yards, he's moving the chains. And with all these injuries, you gotta be proud of the Packers that they finally, you know, have developed what you would consider a legit running game, which might benefit them in the playoffs when nobody's talking about the Packers. And their defense is going to get healthy. Matthews will be back. A.J. Hawk's playing good. Look, Nelson, if you get Cobb and James back and Nelson, and then you got Boykin developing, but Nelson giving you 7 for 123 and 2 TDs, you got to be happy as a Packer fan, wouldn't you say?
I'm telling you, the Packers are a problem. The Packers are one of those teams, and who would have thought 2 years ago that we'd say that the Packers are sneaky good? You know, I still have to believe that Aaron Rodgers is about as good as any quarterback in the NFL. So if you had to give me one player, you know, even above Peyton Manning, I think you'd take Aaron Rodgers just because of his mobility and his accuracy. Nobody has that combination that Aaron Rodgers has. You know, some people are just as accurate, and some people are even maybe more mobile, but he's it. He's the real deal. Now, of course, Breeze and Brady and Manning, you can't go wrong with any of those guys. But I tell you what, the Packers are a tough out in the playoffs because they've won a championship and they have Aaron Rodgers. So if they can get their, like you said, if they can get their receivers healthy, if they can get their defense healthy, you know, that's a team that you don't want to sleep on, and they can beat anybody, and they can take their talents on the road. So granted, you know, they're probably going to be behind San Francisco, behind New Orleans, behind Seattle. That's fine, but this team can win. This team can win three games on the road and go to the Super Bowl, you know, or they'll probably win their division, so they'll win a couple games and they go to the Super Bowl. So don't sleep on the Packers, and I'm sure they love the fact that all the attention is going elsewhere. The Packers are for real. And, you know, I keep saying that, you know, there are some franchises. So during the Aaron Rodgers era, sort of like during the Drew Brees era, you can't put these teams away. They'll always be there. The Packers will be there. The Saints, well, last year the Saints, you know, had an unpredictably, you know, terrible.
Right, so like Brady. Yeah, the big quarterbacks, Brady, Manning, they're always alive, you know. And, you know, it's so funny.
Always have a heartbeat.
Exactly. And you know what? Who doesn't have a heartbeat? The guy that Ray loves to kill, because you know what? He showed it again last night. And the musical chairs of quarterbacks for the Minnesota Vikings, and you feel bad for Leslie Frazier because he's got, like, you know, the Three Musketeers or, like, you know, I don't know, Three Stooges at quarterback. 145 yards from Ponder. And what's so disappointing about it, he can't get anything to the outside receivers. I mean, Patterson gets two. Simpson gets one reception. Greg Jennings gets one reception. It's kind of pitiful. Rudolph is leading the team with 4 for 51. And look at the Packers defense. Like I was, you know, giving them props before. You hold AP, who used to run, like they say, AD, because he runs all day on you. Well, guess what? 13 carries for 60 yards. You know, give some props to Green Bay and their defense, you know. We shout them out and salute them. So before we get to the early games, we got to talk about, you know, we did talk about the Redskins and the Broncos, and, you know, you hope that RG3 and Manning, both of them are okay because they both sort of, you know, have been banged up and RG had to leave the game and Cousins comes in. But 45-21, and I think what was fascinating about this, the Redskins actually had a chance. I mean, the way that they played in the first half, their defense, look, everyone's realizing now, and Julius Thomas will find out about him. I told you in the beginning of the show that he got left early banged up. But 7-7 at the half, Ray, and Washington then starts to pull away, get 14 points in the third quarter, and you're like, wait a minute, what is going on? Are the Redskins, you know, basically going to upset the Broncos? And then from 21-14, they were shut out. 31 points in the fourth quarter, nothing for the Redskins. And I just think people have the formula, but the Redskins don't have the talent to stop Morris. You know, when he you know, you got him going for you, you're thinking, okay, let's keep going. But they got, I don't know if they got away from it, but when Manning gets going, you know, they couldn't keep up with him. Four TDs, 354 yards. And it's, you know, hey, Star Wars stats again, but too much for Shanahan, too much for Morris and RG3 and Cousins and their banged up defense a little bit. What are you thinking about what the Broncos are still able to do, even though they bounce back from the loss and the Chiefs are still undefeated. The Broncos still look like the class of the NFL.
The Broncos are the Oregon of the NFL. 31 unanswered points in the fourth quarter.
Insane.
So the thing that I've learned over the last 3-4 weeks with the Broncos is that they're a team that can really come back from adversity and beat you, and they're never out of it, and they can always score, and they can score quickly. Having said that, they're also beatable. This team still has some flaws, right? Their running game is not legit. It's complementary, right? So if they had to run, I'm not sure they would, you know, be able to move the chains on a consistent basis. So that's number one, their offense. I mean, that's nitpicking on their offense, right? But their defense, right, gave up 21 points to 3, and Washington was, you know, having some success. So I think this team, if you can get physical on the line of scrimmage with them, and you can take, make Manning make some quick decisions and force them to run the ball, and, you know, you can score on this defense. So Denver, as fantastic as they are, and as they can beat anybody, but, you know, elite teams can beat them too. So even though they're 7-1, this is a beatable team, the Broncos.
No, you're right. And we sort of spoke about this, today. I think the Seahawks and Chiefs, the way that they can rush the passer and have, you know, strong secondary, they're probably designed perfectly to sort of beat, you know, this team. Because, look, Marshawn Lynch and Jamal Charles, the corners in the secondary, especially the Seahawks corners, and you have to be aggressive and really attack, like you said, an Oregon-type offense. You have to attack the Denver Broncos offense. You can't, if you sit there and just let Manning pick you apart, or if you sit there and you over-blitz, he's always going to find the open guy. So you really have got to just have that pass rush from the four guys, blitz, you know, sparingly and, you know, wisely, and just really, you know, disrupt their rhythm. Moreno, 44 yards, and like you said, you don't know if they're going to get clutch running to move the chains. And, you know, he gets more out of the backfield, you know, over 60 yards receiving. So, hey, that's sort of what that is. You know, hey, I got to give a shout-out to the Arizona Cardinals. They sort of, you know, beat the – Falcons might be done, Ray. 27-13, looks like the Falcons could be done. Obviously, we did talk about it. We didn't have to go in depth in this one. 49-9, the Bengals, you know, smacked the Jets. I think the one thing, you got to shout out Marvin Jones. 4 touchdowns sets a Bengals record. And it looks like they finally, Andy Dalton's got a number 2 and 5 touchdown passes from Dalton. What do you think about your guy and your Bengals that you predicted to, you know, turn a corner this year? It looks like they've done it, huh?
Yeah, not only have they done it, but they've done it at the right time, right? The season that Pittsburgh and Baltimore looked susceptible to being overtaken in that division, that's
exactly what they did. And you're right, we expected the number 2 receiver to come out of Mohamed Sanu or somebody like that, or even get it from Tyler Eifert or Gresham, you know, and Marvin Jones. Wow. 122 yards, 4 touchdowns for all you fantasy folks. So I give it to Tay. He picked him up in our league. But fantasy-wise or real football-wise, this is great for Andy Dalton, right, to have all of these receivers. Look at these toys and the combination of Giovanni Bernard and Jarvis Green-Ellis. So on offense, right, the weakest link, you could argue, is Andy Dalton. But Dalton's been playing great, and so, you know, he's stepping up. And, again, it doesn't matter until they get to the playoffs, right? But these guys, you know, we know that they have a front four. We know that they can rush the quarterback. We know that they've got, you know, Zimmer orchestrating the defense. So these guys look like they're sneaky good. So I don't know if they're elite yet. And I don't know if they'll become elite, but they're sneaky good. This Cincinnati Bengal team is, they're something to be reckoned with.
Nah, you're right. And yeah, you gotta like, you know, hey, Jones gives you 8 receptions, but, you know, if A.J. Green is only going to get 3 receptions and he does it for 115 yards, you're like, whoa, you know, that's big news, you know. And you're right. This team, to me, look, they didn't run the ball great, but – I think their defense is so tough. And, you know, you look at, you know, all the guys and the way that they get after it, man, I think that they can handle anybody, whether it's the Ravens, the Texans, who, you know, look, you know, Shaw might be playing hurt for the rest of the season, you know, the Patriots, the Broncos. You know, you want to see the Bengals and Colts. But I think right now the AFC, to me, is really looking like it's the Bengals, you know, Broncos, Chiefs, and Colts. You know, I don't know if the Pats might wind up being sort of the fifth team in that scenario. So, I mean, hey, kudos to the Bengals and the Dolphins and the Bengals and Andy Dalton for really shining the last 3 weeks. You could say that maybe he might overall have been the best quarterback in the NFL the way he's been playing.
Funny. Wait, let me ask you something. It's funny because we've talked already for football on this football segment for a while, and we mentioned about 7, 8, 9 teams so far. But not once did we mention the only undefeated team in the NFL. So,
yeah.
Like everywhere else in the media, the Kansas City Chiefs are not getting the props that an 8-0 team typically gets. So let me ask you about just what you think is going on in Kansas City, and do we need to start giving Scott Pioli, because this is basically the same team, do we need to give Scott Pioli a little credit? Because he's the architect that assembled most of this team. Now, granted, Alex Smith came over this year, but this team foundationally is the team that he assembled. So Andy Reid comes, and, you know, so we know how much coaching is important in the NFL. So let's talk about these Chiefs and their 23-16 win over the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, 23-17. You hit it right on the nail, and also, you know, I've said it before. I mean, I thought that Andy Reid and Trestman would be battling for Coach of the Year, and it looks like it's, you know, going to be Andy Reid on the cakewalk, you know, with the injury to Jay Cutler. But look, when you have Jamaal Charles and you have got a defense and you've got a quarterback who, guess what, ladies and gentlemen, he's sort of athletic enough because he can move, he rushes. Had a big game yesterday. I mean, look, only 225 yards, but no interceptions, 2 touchdowns, and Alex Smith moves the chains. He gets the first downs, 40 yards rushing. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, go ahead, Alex Smith. So I like the way that they're built. You obviously want more from Dwayne Bowe. I mean, he's killing people in fantasy. To me, I've got Donny Avery on a team. But the fact that he can get it around, you know, to Avery, he can get it to McGrath, he gets it to Charles out of the backfield, and Dexter McCluster. If Dexter McCluster decides to join the party and be consistent, you know, giving you 7 receptions, 67 yards, you know, that's good. Because, look, Dwayne Bowe was not going to play yesterday. He was banged up. So I don't even know if he really finished the game, and he only had the 1 reception. So, you know, that's pretty big in the sense that, look, the Browns, they've been kind of good. Jason Campbell, you know, they had some trickery plays to get back in this game, the flea flicker to Campbell to Gordon for the touchdown. But overall, you can't say, like, they're playing only scrub teams. The situations have been what they have. They are facing a lot of backup quarterbacks, so that's why they're not getting the proper respect. But at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, 8-0 is 8-0. And going to Kansas City, going to Arrowhead, you better bring your knuckles, because Chiefs are not for joke.
So
not for joke.
People sleep on the fact that, you know, we talked about Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was the 21st overall pick, I think, for Green Bay that year, and Alex Smith was number one. So people look at him like he's a 7th-round journeyman. The guy was the number one overall pick coming out of Utah. And, you know, he had played under Urban Meyer before Urban went to Florida. And this guy, you know, there's a reason you're chosen number one. It's typically on physical, you know, stature and stats and what you do in college. So the fact is he took 5 or 6 years to get his game right and really acclimate to – he had a bunch of different offensive coordinators and even head coaches in San Francisco. So he's really turning out to be – you know, a very, very solid NFL quarterback. Now, is he a number one overall pick a la Peyton Manning or even explosive like Andrew Luck or even a Cam Newton? No, but this guy, you know, he's going to lead this team into the playoffs. And with that defense and with that running game, if they can get Jamaal Charles on track and Dexter McCluster gives them that little X factor, this team, you know, this team is not an easy out. So, yeah, they've been playing some easy teams, but like you said, you play who's on your schedule. So if you're in Kansas City, you must be loving life right now. You're 8-0. Nobody else in the NFL is undefeated. Mercury Morris is still waiting there in his driveway, worried about you.
Oh, my God. That's funny. Well, look, I got to say, before we talk about your team, let's talk about mine. Talk about record setting and stuff. Well, Terrell Pryor set a rushing record at a touchdown for 93 yards from scrimmage for the Raiders, and that was basically it. Before you know it, the Steelers were down 14-0. They win 21-18. My Steelers fought back, tried to come back. But, Ray, I can't say I'm depressed because I just in my head I realize that we're not ourselves this year, and I don't know what it's going to take, but Steelers lose again, and, you know, hey, I got to just take the beating and take the lumps. Take them lumps on my head, them Steelers fans are dead. You know, we're struggling, man. It's almost depressing.
You know what happens sometimes in sports, and, you know, the good teams bounce back and the good teams spring up. Sometimes, you know how sometimes you go to the GNC or you go to the nutrition store and they have all these – powders and vitamins, and sometimes they even get these things that like the cleanse. You know, you hear about the cleanse. So
get
sometimes you just gotta mix it up, put the water in, and sprinkle the powder in, and just drink it, and just cleanse. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's one of those seasons where you figure yourself, look, this is a time to look in the mirror and say, look, we're getting a little bit old on defense. We have some issues with the offensive line. We've got an offensive coordinator that people, you know, our quarterback and our offensive coordinator have never really seen eye to eye. We have a tradition of running the football and being tough. So maybe it's time to go back to basics and just use this season as kind of that cleanse season and just plan ahead for next year and make moves. And Pittsburgh's been as good as anybody else in terms of getting rid of high-priced players at their, you know, right after the peak.
Mike Wallace.
And reloading. And this is one of those years maybe where you just need to think about reloading and start planning ahead for next year. Speaking of reloading, though, I will say this. We talked a little bit about that Cleveland-Kansas City game. Cleveland, please don't get rid of Josh Gordon. You got rid of Trent Richardson. Okay, you got a first-round pick for him. So I don't think you'll get that for Josh Gordon. But please don't get rid of him. I mean, he and Cameron look to be a nice little combo there with wide receiver and tight end, athletic, big, can catch the ball, can run after the catch. You want to give your fans something to look forward to. Now, granted, you're going to rebuild. I get it. But you never have had in the last, you know, 15 years, 20 years, you've never had skill position and specifically receivers that have had anything for the fans to look forward to. So keep this guy. Keep Gordon and Cameron, please.
Amen. Well, you know what's
speaking of trades, I was going to say real quick, speaking of trades, what do you think about Tony Gonzalez? Do you think that the Falcons should and will move him?
I guess my question is where. So if we looked around, is it the Patriots that need a tight end? You know, is it, you know, maybe you say KC, trade him back to KC because they're on that run and that's where he came from and they could probably use a tight end since they, you know, they just have McGrath and they've been all banged up. Yeah, you know what? Honor the guy. You guys are not going anywhere. Are they 1-5 now, or yeah, 1-5 after the bye week? You know, it's interesting because I guess you wonder: do people honor, you know, the 2-5? But do people sort of like honor the fact that someone, you know, he came back and his son gave him permission? Or do you just say, oh, we'll come back. We could run the table and wind up 11-5. You know, I don't know where the Falcons are with that because Roddy White, can't, you know, we don't know if he'll be back next week. Julio Jones is done. So I think it would be gracious and respectful to trade Tony Gonzalez to the Chiefs and then go from there. So, but let's talk about respect or disrespect. But in the battle of respect as the best receiver, I think hands down the second best game ever, besides our boy Flipper Anderson with 336, goes to Hey, remember that 89 with the Los Angeles Rams? But yeah, let's
God.
Tip our hat. Des Bryant was amazing with what he did. It, you know, I just needed more receptions and more targets. But how about Megatron? 31-30, Detroit comes back, and the most amazing comeback I've seen in a while. The Cowboys should be killing themselves for allowing Stafford to drive down the field with so little time. It's like a pass to Reggie Bush out of bounds. Then he hits Megatron. Then he hits Chris Durant. Then he hits Megatron again. And then he basically comes in and just looks like he's going to spike it, and then he just sort of runs in. I don't even think his own lineman even knew. 24 points in the fourth quarter. After a defensive battle, 10-7 at halftime, Ray, I was kind of like expecting the high scoring. We both picked Detroit, but that was amazing, and I think your Cowboys gave a game away because they had it. Megatron, 14 receptions, 329 yards. Not only is he the number one receiver, he might be at a place where he's the best player in the league right now. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, I hate to say that I'm Nostradamus because, you know, I get a lot of things wrong, but I think I got this one right. So I said Megatron's the better receiver. Megatron's the best receiver in the game. And physically, he just has all the tools. And Des Bryant's not far behind, but Des Bryant's not Megatron. And the Cowboys are one of those win one, lose one type of teams. And so every time you get excited about them winning two in a row, then they break your heart and they lose. And they lose a game that they could have won. They were up. They had if they had gotten one first down, they cinched the game, and they find a way to lose. And Detroit is a tough team at home, and they were a little disappointed last couple weeks in how they've been playing. And I just saw this game being a close game. Megatron, who knew that he was going to get 329 yards, by the way? Flipper Jones, was that Jim Everett throwing him the ball? Not Chris Everett.
Oh, my
thing?
Gosh.
With
Jim Rome, yeah. Yeah,
oh
no, it's wild. You know, it's wild. Do we have a caller? Oh, no, we got somebody listening in. So, but, you know, I tell you, it's I got to give the Detroit Lions credit because Ziggy Ansah, Nick Fairley, you know, Sue, you look at Bush, Stafford, Calvin Johnson, if Pettigrew could ever stay balanced, the other big tight end, Joseph Fourier. This team, and Joique Bell does a little bit of pounding, this team, they might actually be in the fight, not to just make the playoffs, but win their division. They could, you know, maybe overtake the Packers. The Lions are for real. And it's kind of good because, you know, they were good 2 years ago, and then last year they sort of fell off. But it looks like they're back, and I think Reggie Bush is sort of what they were missing, you know. And I think that that's kind of cool that, you know, he might be just that perfect missing piece, you know, to put them over the hump. Do you think that having that balance now is exactly, you know, what they needed and to change them?
I do. I love this young nucleus that the Lions have. I do believe, though, that in sports and sometimes in football, you need to learn how to win together. And they haven't consistently won. So they had that good season a couple years ago, and then last year they were bad again. And then this year they look like they'll be okay, 5-3. Maybe they'll end up 10-6. So I don't know that this is the year they do it. But I would be worried, you know, if I'm Chicago and I'm Green Bay, in the long run, this Detroit Lions team is pretty good. So I think they might snatch a wild card this year. I don't know if they'll catch Green Bay and win the division, but I think they'll snatch a wild card. Maybe they lose in the first round. Maybe they win a game. But look for them next year. You know, once they get that, if they figure out on Joique Bell and Reggie Bush, you know, I really liked Michael LeSueur a couple, you know, he had a stretch last year where he looked like he was, you know, he was their up and coming back. But I do like Reggie Bush's explosiveness, and you know that wide receiver crew. It's too bad that, you know, Burleson went down, but Ryan Broyles, if he can stay healthy, they're always looking for that number two behind Calvin Johnson. Everybody's gonna focus on Calvin the next, you know, second half of the season. So I like this Lions team. I do. I'm happy for Detroit fans. They suffered a lot. Look at that. The Lions and the Tigers are playing ball. Maybe the Pistons can get it together with Josh Smith and all those free agents. So
yeah, we'll talk about that tomorrow. We'll talk about that tomorrow, definitely, man. So I guess, you know, looking at, you know, the games and kind of capping up the NFL, we have tonight the Seattle game. You know, probably they will dominate the Rams. You know, look, we got to give props. The Giants won an ugly one, 15-7. Vic is hurt again. Buffalo played tough, but New Orleans and Drew Brees, Jimmy Graham played hurt too much. Sort of surprising. The Dolphins, you know, Hank's team, they looked like they were going to beat the Patriots, and the Patriots come back and just, you know, 27-17 and sort of handle them. I don't know. Do you think now, I mean, look, it's 42-10 over the Jaguars, so it's not anything in there in London. But do you think now that the Niners are sort of back after that Seattle smacking and losing to the Colts, where they're sort of back in their rhythm, or has it just been the opponents? I mean, are the Niners sort of where they need to be, or?
The Niners are exactly where they need to be. And here's the thing. Not only are the Niners and the Seahawks back where they need to be, if they handle the return of Michael Crabtree to the Niners and
Harvin might come back earlier next week, maybe.
Right. To the Seahawks, these teams are even more explosive. So if you thought they were the best two teams in the NFL and the NFC and maybe the NFL, they're only going to get better. Now, obviously, the Saints have to be reckoned with. And obviously, there are, you know, Green Bay, anytime you throw Aaron Rodgers on the field, you got yourself a chance. But, wow, the Niners and the Seahawks look to just be humming along. For a team that's got, you know, has a bad loss and potentially could be down on themselves, they're 6-2, the Niners, right? So they're fantastic. And if they can get healthy and they can get some explosiveness on the outside back, you know, they're even talking about Mario Manningham. And, wow, this team can get better, if you can believe that. So Bolton's holding it down for them, and then Frank Gore and Kendall Hunter are doing their thing, and Kaepernick's regaining his confidence. Wow, this team is tough, man. I still have them winning it all, the Niners.
Yeah, no, we both did. So look, let's talk about it. Seattle tonight, no Sam Bradford, Kellen Clemens. I guess that says it right there. Zach Stacy, Kellen Clemens, and what, Jared Cook or Tavon Austin. Look, the Rams, it's unfortunate. Jeff Fisher has built up this defense. I think, you know, a healthy Sam Bradford has got them in the right direction. I don't think they have enough weapons offensively still. I think tonight could get brutal. Fantasy-wise, I don't need the Seahawks defense to do too much, but they probably will, so I'm probably going to lose in fantasy. I'll say this. I got to say that the Rams should probably win this one. I'll go 27-6.
The
Seahawks will win this 27-6. I think the Rams have, you know, luckily GZ gets two field goals at best. It could get ugly.
That's Greg the Leg. You like your boy Zerline?
Yeah, GZ. He's good, but I had to drop him in fantasy, right? Because he's not enough opportunities. So who's your pick? Give me a score, man. Seahawks, man. I know you.
Look, the only thing keeping this from an absolute blowout is that it's not in Seattle. So maybe the St. Louis Rams take a little bit of, you know, energy from the fans and translate it on the field. I'll give them one touchdown. I'll give them 13 points. I think they lose 31-13. I think the Rams get crushed in the first half, and then Seattle just runs the ball in the second half and just coasts to a victory. 31-13 Seahawks.
Wow. Can't argue with that. Great show. Look, thank you. I got to say thank you to all the fans and all the listeners, to the doctors at Scottsdale Health. You know, in the ICU PEDS unit, Dr. Raul Chala and Dr. Fiorito and Dr. Gross, they got a fantasy football league over there with the nurses, and they're playing. But they took great care of my son, William Truth Taylor, home after 22 days, came home in his Batman costume. So I just thank everybody for your well wishes and your prayers. I thank the doctors for keeping my boy alive and going, and William will continue to heal at home. So thank you. Tomorrow, Ray, as Ray jet sets back to the East Coast, we bring you our NBA preview. We might have a guest or two on the show to join us. We'll see. But either way, you're going to get our picks Ray and Tay today.
Talking
sports,
with friends.
Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow at 6.
We're out.
Peace.
I wanna scream so loud for you.